Meditation.
Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days.
I mean,
days
I just feel like the waterfall of thoughts. And every now and then, a nice calm.
I can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City.
The Shambhala New York Podcast.
And I'm Dave, your host. Thanks for listening yet again to the podcast. Today, we're talking about spring. Shastri Elizabeth Reed, you know her, she's a senior teacher in the Shambhala Buddhist tradition, regular contributor to the podcast. She gave a talk a couple weeks ago on the first day of spring, March 20th, at our weekly Dharma gathering. And it's all about finding balance, finding equanimity, a sense of contentment, basically. Maybe you're like me, maybe you've been feeling particularly discontent in these times, these very uncertain times, a lot of turbulence, personal, political, what have you. And a lot of us come to meditation because we want a sense of balance, a sense of being able to ride the waves of uncertainty, so to speak. So what does that actually look like? And how can meditation help? How does it work? That is the topic of today's talk by Shastri Elizabeth Reed. And speaking of contentment, I want to point out that the Shambhala Meditation Center of New York offers a course called Contentment in Everyday Life. It's a 4-week course. It's beginning April 11th. That's Wednesday, April 11th. It's all about exploring this idea of equanimity, contentment. For more information and to register, go to ny.shambhala.org, click the link on the homepage, and maybe we'll see you there. Okay, here is Shastri Elizabeth Reed on a particular snowy spring equinox.
Happy spring. I was speaking to a 3-year-old that lives right next door to me and actually has her birthday on the same day as mine. So I feel kind of connected with her. Her name is Natalie. And she loves words, and she talks, and she picks up words so quickly. And she wants you to hear, you know, what she's saying. So I met her and her father in the hallway, and he said, she has just something to tell you. And this was on Sunday. And she said, spring is coming in 2 days. Spring is coming in 2 days. And my husband was there, and he said, oh, Natalie, well, so what if it's still cold? She said, spring is coming in 2 days. And so I'm just thinking what she was told about spring and how she reacted today. But I feel as though, you know, this is kind of what we do. We have an expectation, and damn it, you know, what are they doing to us? It's still freezing. What's, you know, what is happening? This is not good. I can't take it anymore. And so we end up in caught in hope and fear. I hope the weekend's going to be sunny because I'm going to the beach. Or I'm fearing, oh, it's going to rain. I know it's going to be not good. But we speak about equanimity being beyond hope and fear. And the hope we're speaking about is not a vision for your life. Like, I want this for myself. I want to follow a vision. But it's the hope that things will go our way. We want this to happen. And the fear that they won't go our way. And it seems that it is, we find ourselves on a constant seesaw, hope and fear, hope and fear, hope and fear. And it seems like these chaotic times demand equanimity. It's so difficult to exist in times that you wake up every morning bracing yourself for what you're going to see in the paper, or you're bracing yourself for the next storm to come, or you're hoping that things will change. And It's a difficult time. So we are fortunate with the Shambhala teachings to have teachings rooted in the images of four mythical creatures. And they represent the way, they represent the confidence that we need to live our lives day to day. And they are also the way we work with opening or uncovering our innate qualities of gentleness, bravery, wisdom, and compassion. So when we're sitting and meditating just now, we are simply uncovering, we're giving a chance for those things to blossom. And this is a wonderful time, the first day of spring, to have a blossoming. You know, we all need that, those qualities to rise. So with the four qualities, we call them dignities or energies. I'll just say that we begin with the tiger. And the tiger is symbolic of contentment. And this is fully contented with oneself. When I spoke about the ability to befriend oneself through meditation, it's the ability to accept everything and anything that you experience as a human being. That is true contentment. And the tiger has that quality of being friendly to itself and also kind to others. You could also say, and therefore kind to others. The only way we can truly be kind is if we embody that for ourselves. That's how it comes out naturally then, that we want to be kind to others because we know how hard it is just living day to day. And we've allowed ourselves to experience these energies that are just the energy of humanity and nothing more. I went to a genius at the Apple store last week, and it just came into my mind that this young man came over to help me, and my phone had frozen. I just couldn't do anything about it. And anyway, he asked me what had happened, and I said, well, you know, I came back from a week-long meditation retreat, and when I start to put in my password, I had completely forgotten it. He said, really? I said, yeah, and I kept trying and trying, and then until it actually froze. But I said, I think I had let go so much of, I just forgot. And anyway, then he said, oh, you know, my dad meditated. He meditated for 6 hours, and he'd never meditated before in his life. I said, well, that's cool. And he said, you know, it's not for me. He said, I would never want to do that. It's scary. And I said, really? And he said, yeah, And anyway, he asked me a few questions about the retreat, and I just started saying, well, this is very, very beneficial. And actually, you find that you actually like yourself. You spend this time with yourself, and something happens. That, you know, there's not a boogeyman there. It's just you and your heart and mind. And you make a wonderful, intimate connection with yourself. It's so profound. And then he became very enticed. And anyway, we talked a little bit more, and he was asking more questions, and anyway, by the end of it, he had fixed my phone beautifully, and he got up and he said, "You know something? Thank you." He shook my hand. He said, "I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it." He probably thought, well, a woman like that, if she can do it, I can do it, you know. But it was this, but that is what we're afraid of, our own thoughts. And that's crazy, you know, that people can be so worried about what they're going to find. So anyway, what our view of what we call basic goodness is, are these qualities that we simply uncover, which comprise basic goodness. And so the tiger has developed, now this is the very first step we take, but the tiger develops true humility without arrogance. And this first pass-through of working with a dignity is that we are not bloated with the poison of arrogance, that we become humble and available. And it's a very important first step, because without this, it's hard to go on. And also, poison of arrogance is destroying our country. It's destroying our community, many communities. It is poison. Therefore, we need to work with ourselves and work in ways that are humble and open, so that we know how to learn and how to go forward without arrogance. The second energy we encounter is the lion. And there's one word for the lion is perky. But it engages with discipline and finds that it brings delight. And it's the discipline of not doubting one's own wisdom, bravery, intelligence, and compassion, so that we are not drawn into, we could call a setting sun view of ourselves or others, but that we know through discipline, practice of meditation, we are tuning ourselves into basic goodness. But it does require discipline, as you realize just sitting here this evening. And with that lack of doubt, we find also that we're able to help others. Then we can reach out. We have no doubt about our own goodness. Then we'd have no doubt about another's. We're all human beings with the same qualities. So we get to Garuda, and you could say with each step, we are letting go more and more. We are letting go more of our grip, how we want things to be, slowly letting go. You know, watching, noticing our thoughts in meditation, letting them go, coming back, and able to let go into space, which is basically a space that is beyond our preconception. It's a space that is called sometimes openness, selflessness, or emptiness. And emptiness can sound a little bleak, but this is empty of our preconceived notions. So we can be in the space completely free, there, just there. So the Sakyong speaks in his book, Ruling Your World, about how change causes anxiety. And he says, we can experience a separation, a death, a birth, an illness, like a drop of water. We can drown in it or be nourished by it. That makes sense to you? Death and birth, illness, separation, drown or be nourished. So that is the view that we have toward meeting the world with equanimity, that anything that comes our way can actually nourish us because we are there for it. So working with meditation definitely sets us on that road. And then something else that happens is, and I think that is important, has been important for me, is connecting to our senses, connecting to our sense perceptions. Because with this energy of equanimity comes clear seeing. And sometimes we talk about direct perception, meaning seeing, feeling, touching something without an agenda, just directly contacting our world. And you might find sometimes, if you meditate, if you're meditators, and you meditate for a session and you walk outside and suddenly the world seems really kind of bright. Like, wow, I don't think I've noticed that before. So we are clearing away the veils that we have and able to feel and touch and see the brilliance and beauty of our lives every day. I think that one, I had an experience just a little while ago of waking up in the middle of the night and having a very, very intense feeling of loss of something, and thinking, how can I handle this? How can I navigate? It's too much to handle. And I didn't know what to do. And so I just got up and went down. I went to sit on my couch. And I put my hands on my thighs. Just like that, I felt this warmth. And I felt very nurtured just by that contact. And I also felt very clear. My mind felt very clear. And I thought, this can happen. This can happen. Letting go, taking a fresh start, you're just there. And it's a miracle. It's a miracle, but we can do that as human beings. And I think because I've trained myself, it can happen quite quickly. That suddenly, all that strife and wanting to know and wanting things to work out is just evaporated. And we're just there in the moment, feeling alive. So also, I feel that with the Shambhala teachings, was that a bird? We have, there's a shamanic element to our practice, and we are encouraged to work with the elements and connect to the phenomenal world, to connect with nature. We are nature, we are part of it, and we're often so distant, especially in the city. You can go from work, from bed to work, to out to eat, back, bed, work, out, eat. I mean, and not even notice the sky or the air or the strong breeze. And so I think one thing that I've found, not this past year, but the two prior years, and before that, my husband and I made a practice of going out and hiking in all weather during the year. We go to Harriman State Park, and there's wonderful trails and lakes there, but the result of going out and actually being in the natural world is wonderful equanimity, because you're not separate, you're just in it. It's just, it's weather, but you're in the weather. And so you're not complaining. But I remember us having chestnuts roasting on an open fire, literally fire pit, on Christmas Day up there. And it's just such a treat, and so important that we know that we are made up of these elements. We can be with these elements, and they make us strong, you know, that connection. It strengthens us. And not only that, but we can make friends with the seen and unseen energies around us. And I know for this last year, I actually feel like I miss my friends, because there are places and there are trees there that we have come to know. And it's like our family. And I find that so nourishing and nurturing. And it is, that's usually, I think what happens is that is the full, you know, when you get to the last scorpion seal, it's like, okay, they let us out in nature. You know, maybe you can handle it now. But it's really important. So, and that's also a wonderful way to feel more equanimity toward life in general. Highly recommend that. Also, there's, with this, going back to my cabin retreat, we are encouraged, after we've practiced for a while, to do these retreats where we're solitary, we're alone. Mine was for 7 days, in a cabin, surrounded by nature, and also protected from other people coming near the area that you're in, so that you are alone. You don't see a soul or hear a soul for that amount of time. And again, it's very beneficial to learn how incredibly amazing you are as being a human being and connecting to nature every day. And what happened on this retreat, I hadn't done one in quite a while, and I went out in the evening we offer a tea sort of to the energies, the local energies, just as a, you know, honor them. So it was dusk, and I went out, there was this little porch to offer the tea, and I looked out, and right along my sight line, there was a very large bird, and all I saw was this beautiful full chest, and what I also saw was a crown on top of, looked like a crown on top of the head. And I thought, am I in a fairy tale? I don't understand this bird with a crown. And anyway, I looked and looked, and the bird looked and looked at me. It didn't move. And then I started talking. I said, I love you. I said, I love you. You are so beautiful. And it was this gorgeous, large, it was a large breast. And And I said, who are you? You are so beautiful. And then after a couple more minutes, I took it and moved, and I thought, oh, it's going to fly. However, what happened is it didn't fly. It suddenly lengthened its neck, had this long, long neck, and turned to the left and slowly started walking into the woods. And its tail feathers spread out almost like a peacock. And it was the most glorious queen I had ever seen, this crowned bird walking slowly into the woods, very sure of the footing and disappearing. And anyway, that's the magic. That's the magic that can happen. And I didn't even want to look to find out what that was, you know, when I got home, because I didn't want to. But it was called a crested, oh, what's that other word? No, a crested guinea fowl, a crested guinea fowl. And anyway, that's the only animal I saw the whole time. And I actually felt that as a transmission of equanimity. I was thinking of equanimity and it was in my mind. I thought, there's the queen, there's the space. This is how we maneuver. And I will never forget it. And magic. So, well, I guess I'm not missing anything. anyway, when we speak about allowing more and more space, the space eventually becomes so big it can accommodate whatever comes our way. When we can allow that, even for a moment, big space, anything that comes our way, it's said that we can meet any situation with gentleness, bravery, and compassion. Any situation. We're built for it. And that's hopefully what we begin to feel and trust just by our own practice. And what happens with that also is that we have a much bigger perspective and we have more patience. We have more patience. Big, big view. So little things aren't so important. No. And it also brings, when we let go to that extent, there is a lightheartedness. We're very happy, even though maybe the worst thing in the world has just happened. We know we can be there. And there's a lightness about it, and even humor and curiosity. So it said that we are not wanting there to be another now. We're not wanting there to be another now. And that letting go is an endless possibility. We could let go every single moment. Every moment is fresh, unless we make it unfresh. So there's always that possibility. And by accepting what the moment presents to us, we expand our heart and our minds just by accepting it. So we can see that we could accept our world just as it is, which is constantly changing and also exhibiting basic goodness. And it's also said that when we feel this and work in this way, our presence can actually emanate to the rest of the world, and we can, for ourselves, we can wear good clothes, eat good food, think good thoughts, and respect ourselves as dignified human beings all the time. And with that sort of inner confidence we develop, talk about unconditional confidence, we start to feel that. And it's a strength. It can't be taken away. And it's said that equanimity can become a personal field of power. Talk about a field of power that is can magnify what we need to move forward in life. It's, you know, energies are palpable. People know, people feel, and animals as well. So it's possible for us to then uplift the world and actually be strong enough to extend our love to every single creature, even for a moment, to have that strength, that we could extend our love without bias to everyone and every being. I think you've probably all had moments of that. We just want to make them longer. and give our struggle a break. Just give it a break and be there.
So the talk really resonated with me because just maybe a week ago, at the job that I have, we do little huddles before we open the store. And I was listening to Pema for quite a few days, and something resonated with me, which was, if you treat yourself nice, you can treat other people nice. So I said that at the huddle, because we deal with a lot of customers every day, a lot of customers, and we're known for being very, very nice. And a lot of the times, there's a lot of frustrations at work, and I try to say things, inspirational things at the huddles where they don't sound very Buddhist because I don't want people to like not listen. But I just asked them, you know, when was the last time you bought yourself flowers? When was the last time you did something nice for yourself? Because if you are able to just be nice to yourself, then you can be really nice to our customers, and it wouldn't feel forced or anything like that. So I'm very thankful for the chat today because it really hit me. So thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you. I wanna go there. Be treated nicely.
Thank you. Thanks for the beautiful talk. I also got a lot out of it. I'm still left with a question, and in fact, I was talking to my partner. What's your name again?
Brian.
Brian. Okay. So I'm actually moving to South Africa, and I'm very excited about it. But I did just visit, and I have lived in Africa for quite a while and love many, many aspects of it, different places in Africa, and I'm excited to be going back. But I am also very anxious about where I'm going. I don't particularly like it. And Johannesburg, it's a big city, you know, high walls. People aren't out socializing in the streets, and there's not bike lanes and things that I've come to really rely on. There's not Shambhala centers. You know? So I'm struggling with a lot of fear about, just the living environment for what I want right now in my life. So the question that I had, and in fact, Charles said something. Charles?
Brian.
I don't like this. Sorry.
Brian, Charles.
I'll get it. Actually, I liked what you first said when you gave your story, and I'm not going to tell your story, but it was you're in this beautiful place, yet your mind is still preoccupied with the reality of work, right, because you had a job to do. And so it was just an interesting, paradox in turn. But my question is really about, I know I am preparing for being there and having a very positive mind about it, and I know I'm going to find things that I love and find ways to really come alive in the ways that I want to as well and take advantage of the things that I'm going there for, of course. But I'm thinking about preparation, and when you have a lot of anxiety or fear, how you can work with that in preparing, like, well ahead of time to be open, I suppose. Yeah.
Well, I think if there's anxiety in the preparation, you can, have the idea of just starting fresh over and over again, like, okay. This is simple. I'm just doing this. Come back to your senses, what you're doing. Sense perceptions help ground you, bring you into the moment. And then I don't know if your question was a bigger question about your safety or, you don't know quite what you're going to find. But something that comes along with this energy is a lot of clarity. So with it, it's not just, it's very clear so that we are able to then make a good decision. There's a lot of clarity that comes with this. So that with openness comes clarity. And we aren't, what's the word? Can't think of the phrase. Stupid about things, we actually see things clearly and navigate from that clear seeing place. So it sounds like you just have to fly and see what happens. You're flying into open space. You have no idea, but. That's the only answer I can give, is that it takes a lot of courage. In some way, everything is like that. I'm expecting to come home to my husband and my cat, but you never know, It's sort of, we just go. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Shastri Elizabeth Reed, and thank you all for listening to the podcast. Hey, tell your friends about it. Maybe you have friends who are stressed out, could use a little equanimity, perhaps. We're here. Email us at podcast@shambhalanyc.org. Your questions, comments, suggestions. Our website is ny.shambhala.org, where you can see all of our upcoming courses and weekend retreats. If you live in a different city, there's probably a Shambhala Meditation Center near you. Look us up. But if you are in the New York City area, come to our weekly Dharma gathering. It's every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. You can hear these talks live and in person. It's a good time. Okay, I've said my piece. Now I'm going to eat a pizza. Later.